Good morning, it's Thursday.
Good morning. I'm Susie. That's Matt. This is Wenatchee Insurance.
And it's Suzilla.
It is Suzilla at Wenatchee Insurance. And we're trying to be back consistently. I know we've been kind of haphazard the last few months.
Because we got the late night Wednesday email bombs that we have to respond to immediately on Thursday.
Which is not there this morning.
No, that's a nice thing.
It's a good thing, hopefully.
So we're easing on. But today's topic is the whole continuing education versus continuing improvement.
Well, there's no reason why they can't both be true. Why are they a versus? Why can't they be both?
Well, because we're in a very versus society.
Well, we don't have to be.
We don't have to be, but for the most part, we are.
Eh.
There's a lot of, you know, say one thing, do another.
Yeah, well, yeah, I got to agree with you on that one. So the topic, I imagine the topic came up because we are in our, we're getting ready to renew our licenses for our insurance licenses so we can keep, you know, writing policies for folks. And our birthdays are coming up, so we have to do our continuing education to keep those licenses.
Yeah, and... Woohoo.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I love it. And there's two schools of thought with continuing education. I bet that's one of the things that triggered.
Well, yeah, there is two schools. And I was kind of blown away that we diverged from that path over 6 years ago.
Oh, the just rip it out and do stuff that you already know and move forward?
Yeah, because there is a common theme. You'll see it if you go on to any sort of
professional
board. Is there are some that believe in the, hey, let's get it done as cheaply and as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And what happens in that situation a lot of the times is you just go over the stuff you already know, so you just rip through it and answer the questions and move on. That's where continuous improvement is coming in. That's where your thought process was.
Yeah. And we really, well, even early on, I'd go to events and stuff and bring additional information back. They wouldn't fully, you know, accredit some of those things. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, it helped my growth and learning. Events are incredibly important for that because it's a different learning style. And I'd love to see those continuous education credits require a live component.
I don't.
Okay.
Because I find those live components to be tedious and difficult to get to. And I just don't thrive in those situations. But everyone learns differently.
Everyone learns differently. However, the material is presented differently.
Yeah.
And yeah, we are kind of in the black hole of healthcare in the central Washington. Yeah,
because
so we would have to travel.
We'd have to travel 3 hours to get 2 CE credits. Mm-hmm. It's like, so you have to really decide whether or not the learning that they're offering is worth your time and energy and money. Because it's going to cost, oh yeah, it's a free CE credit, but yeah, I might have to spend $200 for a hotel room for it.
Yeah.
You have to consider that. Sometimes we go because it's just part of the deal. You know, last year, for example, we did, and we weren't able to do it this year, which broke my heart a little bit, was the Day on the Hill.
Yeah.
Which was fun. And we got to talk to legislators and learn new things and talk to new people. But we weren't able to this year because of circumstances beyond our control. Mm-hmm. And that actually gave us a couple of CE credits, which was kind of cool. There's got to be value with the experience beyond just those credits.
However, it was about 6 years ago because this was the third cycle that I used the particular group that we picked.
Yeah.
Because they're you know, incredibly professional, and oh my gosh, you learn stuff.
Yeah, which is good. Now, but there's some out there that are, there's different companies you can work with to get those continuing education credits. The one we work with gives you a really nice variety of things you can actually learn. There are some out there that are just not. Their information is dated, and you're not learning anything. And one of the things that Matt pointed out about 6 years ago is like, listen, let's do something. And he started it before I did. I'll be honest. When I was first couple of years, I was like, okay, I'm just going to get through this. He pointed out, it's like, no, you really need to pick something that you can learn from. Mm-hmm. Don't just do what you already know. Pick something new. And things that are interesting to you or things that you can use in your everyday life or in your everyday work life. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, you're right. So I, started branching out and did long-term care, doing a refresher on that, by the way, this year.
Okay. Because that's a continuing question that comes up.
Yeah. And it's not going to stop. Mm-hmm. With the estimate I got from one of the ones I'm doing right now, mm-hmm. which is, I don't remember the title of it, but it's dealing with an aging population.
Yeah.
And they're estimating by 2060, about 59% of the population will need long-term care.
Okay.
Over 65 population will be needing long-term care. And it's going to be a very large population for the simple fact that we've got a very large population getting older.
Yeah.
It's the baby boomers getting older. And then eventually our generation as well. The fact is we are not going to stop getting old and we are going to need to be taken care of.
Well, it's not just the aging part. Cause I mean, there was points where younger members of our population were needing long-term care services, mm-hmm. That aren't covered by traditional health insurance.
It's true. Long-term care is not covered by traditional health insurance, period. End of discussion, including Medicare.
Yeah, and
bringing these numbers up is COVID.
Yeah, the damages from it. You know, you hear of, someone in their 20s or 30s having a stroke.
And that happens.
And that rehabilitative care.
That is the short-term care.
Uh-huh.
But
if it's massive, it falls into long-term.
If it's past 100 days. You're into long-term care. It's mm-hmm. like, cause it's going to take,
Yeah. So it's kind of important to have these discussions so that, oh my gosh, you could be in your 20s and 30s and
end up disabled permanently. And needing someone to wipe your butt. But that's one of the things mm-hmm. we learn is we try to, like I said, Matt pushed both of us to stop doing the rubber stamp and learn.
Well, yeah, that was because that was the kind of the social aspect mm-hmm. of that particular insurance group that I was with.
Oh yeah, that's true.
It was kind of this weird churn and burn, and not work on really enriching the agents.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can see that today when you start talking with the agents. I mean, it was readily apparent mm-hmm. by on how quickly I outstripped the on the district and in larger levels of knowledge on the industry.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you study things that don't give you continuing education credits. You just mm-hmm. you're just an insurance sponge.
Well, yeah, it's important because one of the things that's coming up that we're looking at adding is crop insurance.
Yeah.
And it operates in almost a very different level mm-hmm. in its binding requirements. And I talked with our partner Shayla and I'm like, look, I want to, be able to do, at least the backup CSR stuff.
Yeah.
So I have a better understanding on when we have the talk.
Uh-huh.
Because I talk to a lot of the customers.
It's true. Everybody that walks to the office, Matt, at least greets. Usually mm-hmm. there's a whole conversation at some point.
At some point, so if we get some sort of backlog, I have the conversation. And having that, intimate knowledge on, how something works is important. Mm-hmm. And, having the office banter, the social aspect mm-hmm. of being able to talk about, well, this type of policy covers this or this policy covers that mm-hmm. or how does this work, it only increases the knowledge of the total agency.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's by stretching those boundaries, it's incredibly important. I went back through and was doing my ethics portion.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, you know, this is my 12th year. So I've done 5 cycles of this plus my initial.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, at this point, you know, I was laughing about on ethics, where they were talking about diversity and the importance of diversity.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, you know, I've done this cycle so many times, and it's like, it's absolutely true. It's you know, something that is near and dear to our heart and why we operate in the manner that we do. They're talking about respect and dignity just continually. And it's like, yeah, this is, you know, ingrained into our agency. It's ingrained into the actual training
mm-hmm.
that we've had for years. And at the same time, how many other agencies, how many other groups that have ethics training do nothing about it?
Yeah, that's true. The whole ethics training. Well, okay, gets to a point. The ethics is something we are required to do 3 hours of every time we do.
Every 2 years.
Every 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's part of the deal is you have to do an ethics training. Mine is the ethics of the seniors. You know, those who are I don't remember what the title is, but it's dealing with folks who are, you know, might be having some difficulties with cognitive situations.
That's huge.
It's huge. I thought that was a really valuable CE. And unfortunately, it's not really focused on what I do, but it still has some very usable tools in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very financial. Focused.
Well, yeah, that probably arose out of the California had some laws passed on protecting seniors regarding financial products.
Exactly, because they were having a lot of problems with people taking advantage. Not just in California, we had that happen up here in Washington, here in Wenatchee, as a matter of fact.
Here in Wenatchee, yes, we did have an agency that literally got committed. I want to say fraud was the official.
I think that was the official fraud.
Multiple charges.
It was ugly. It was not pretty at all.
However, there still to this day, there isn't specific mm-hmm. laws to protect mm-hmm. seniors.
One thing I got to give credit to is some of the, according to the CE I'm working mm-hmm. on, I'm not done with it yet, but some of the insurance companies themselves are laying down standards. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, you cannot sell this type of annuity F to somebody over the age of 75, for example.
Yeah.
There and they've got stops in place to help reduce people from being ripped off, which I think is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But more than anything, what they're discussing is being clear and making sure everyone understands what's going on. And if there's issues, then maybe you need to get another person in the room kind of thing.
Yeah, because it is incredibly important. And we're seeing this ethical battle played out in insurance between producers and agents.
Yes. We've seen that a couple of times
mm-hmm.
Where the person who's working for the agency, who is a producer for them, they're writing the policies, they're doing the work, and the agent is not behaving in an ethical manner.
Yeah.
And that's hard for the ethical producer.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for them because they still need to make a living. It's hard for them because they're being pushed into doing unethical things, or they're being ripped off personally. You know,
oh,
it's tough. One thing about ethics is you want to try and align your ethics with your partners.
Yeah. You gotta build an ethical culture around you.
Yeah.
I've talked to more than one producer or even CSR,
mm-hmm. customer service reps,
and, you know, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And that could get you in trouble down the road.
Yep.
And this was, you know, under guidance of an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been some pretty egregious stuff out there.
Oh yeah. We've heard stories, and I hope a lot of them aren't true, but entirely too many of them are. And that's what's mm-hmm. frightening. So we've got continuing education versus continuing improvement.
That's another thing that the...
Now, why is it versus? Why can't they be both?
Because one of the biggest arguments that we saw in the bonds was that our kids were not improving.
Of the school bonds.
The school bonds. Mm-hmm. That was one of the big counterpoints about that was the school that basically the money was going down rat holes.
Okay.
Or going into union pockets. And we heard this, and then we've seen this used the last probably half decade or decade or so.
Yeah, used it on the bonds, and we've seen it also in the school board elections.
Is the school board elections, and we're seeing it in the rise of the attempt to shift funds from public schools to charter schools.
Which is just another word for private schools, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Private schools with public education funds.
Yeah. And that it's really important to get a handle on that argument because it is an argument. It's not necessarily done in good faith.
No.
You know, it's like, oh, hey, let's strip these schools down to the bare bones and wonder why we're not producing excellent students.
Yeah, we've had this conversation. This has been a conversation that's been going on ever since there have been public schools.
And we're also going to, you know, we need to expand that conversation into it just can't be around when there's bonds.
No, you're right. That's one of the things we've noticed is the only time people talk about this is if there's money to be voted on.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that needs to be discussed year round. We don't need to look at this as just an election year conversation. This needs to be, because if we are talking about it all the time,
yeah.
When it does come up, people are educated about it and they can make an educated decision about what's actually their vote.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can vote yes, you can vote no, but as long as you know why you're voting that way, rather than just someone telling you to vote away, that's the smart thing.
Well, we need to have these, it's that, you know, that front porch conversation. and it really is a front porch conversation of, hey, what's going on in our town?
Yeah.
You know, does the choir need new robes?
Yeah.
You know, or you know, how's the busing? You know, should we switch over to electric buses because we've got the cheapest electrical rates in the nation?
Yeah, why haven't we done that?
You know, what are we doing to improve, you know, the amount of bus drivers we have because they always seem to be hiring.
Yes, that's huge right now. How do we support the bus drivers? Mm-hmm. How do we support the teachers so they don't have to spend half their paychecks on school supplies?
Mm-hmm.
How do we support, the administration so they can do their jobs? And how do we support the students so they can learn? How do we support the support staff, the parapros and the maintenance and the janitorial staff so they can do their job, so they can actually have, you know, a bucket of sawdust in case some poor kid hurls in the middle of a classroom?
I mean, yeah, it's really, that's why I call it a front porch conversation. These are things that are front porch that for some reason have been, you know, kicked off the porch under the guise of, oh, it's politics, we can't talk about that.
There was a meme I read the other day. By teaching us not to talk about politics and religion, we don't know about politics and religion like that. And we never learned how to talk about it. And it just restricts us from having open conversations about it.
Yeah.
And by not having conversations, we end up with us versus them attitudes. Because we get siloed into our own little churches, our own little political groups, and we're not listening to the world around us.
Oh yeah, and in the whole notion of capitalism is one of siloing people.
Really, that's an interesting thought.
Because you only want them to buy products from you.
Oh, okay. I guess I can look at it that way.
And you only want them to listen to content from you.
That you're sure that's capitalism?
In late term capitalism, I'm sure that's where everyone's pushing, and we see that with monopolies.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the thing is, if you want a well-rounded capitalist society, you need competition.
Yes, And the majority of folks are not striving for that marketplace.
They don't want that well dialogue. They don't want that well-rounded society. They just want, you buy my stuff because
they want, you know, the appearance of education and not learning the material.
Okay. Ah, back to continuing education versus continuing improvement.
Like I said, they're forcing, oh, I'm required to do this, so I'm gonna just blow through it and do horrible things. I'm not gonna improve myself.
Yeah.
Which was the intent, was to improve.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's what we got to get to. It's like, okay, you know, how do we make our town better?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what are people looking for?
What do they need?
What do they need? What are we lacking?
There you go. What's missing?
And you could go to 100 different Facebook groups out there and ask the question, hey, what would you like to see?
I get 1,000 different answers.
Well, you're going to get a bunch of answers that are like, oh, we need a Red Lobster.
We need a Trader Joe's.
We need a Trader Joe's. Well, that's all fine and dandy if you bought into the marketing and into the silos that these are the best and greatest things.
Yeah.
Instead of, hey, you know what? We could use a great seafood restaurant.
Uh-huh.
Or, hey, we could use a great independent grocer that does natural foods.
Uh-huh. We actually have a decent independent grocer that does natural foods.
But that's the difference between just doing, I'm doing this because that's what's required.
I like this brand. We need this brand.
Versus, hey, let's actually do the improvement.
Instead of, hey, let's support a small business person with some tax breaks and let them start a new business.
Mm-hmm. But that is the very difference. One is convenience.
Yeah, that's true. And people in this country are very brand focused too, which creates different stuff.
It depends on where you're at.
Okay.
Economically.
Okay.
Years ago when I was doing business psychology and studying up on that, they discovered that the upper and the upper class, you know, they were talking that the 5% to 1%,
yeah,
didn't buy things based on brand.
I imagine they buy based on value.
They bought things based on value. When you go all the way down to the middle lower and the lower, you know, the bottom 5%.
Oh. I'm
they bought things based on survival.
Yes.
So brand again was thrown away.
Yeah.
That, you know, that large swing of, you know, of the upper lower to the lower upper.
The middle class is what you're saying.
The middle class is deeply entrenched in brand.
Yeah. Well, it's the keeping up with the Joneses theory.
Yeah.
Now the problem is the middle class is shrinking dramatically and in a frightening speed. So there's either like super rich or super poor. There's very little in the middle anymore.
Is it?
I've gotten that impression that the middle is definitely shrinking. Am I wrong?
Well, it was 2016 election cycle.
Okay.
We actually had, it was 6 politicians in our room.
Okay.
And because we, you know, where do you go to talk about healthcare and improving the healthcare system?
Yeah.
Well, you go to people who understand it.
You're assuming the politicians understood it.
No, they came to us to better understand what was going on.
No, I remember that. Yeah. Which is a good thing.
And one of the things that quickly came to head was the question, okay, what's the middle class?
Yeah.
And the number varied incredibly.
Yeah, very, very. And I think in the last 10 years, which is, it's been about 8 years since that conversation, the amount you need to be considered middle class dollar-wise is higher, you know? And unfortunately, the salaries are not keeping up with that. Mm-hmm. Wages are not keeping up with that. You need to be working a lot of more hours and losing a lot of, you know, you time, the balance is off for those who are, who want to be in the quote middle class. That's why, yeah, you know, we look at how upside down, you know, housing rates have been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're maybe they're improving, but I don't think we're good. I think it's going to take a long time to see it ever catch up. But at this point, the way the future is being predicted is there's going to be an entire group of people that will never be able to buy a house.
What we need to do is, instead of looking at, you know, this upper and lower class,
mm-hmm.
is we need to start looking at, okay, who's got disposable income? Who's got available income?
Who's liquid? Yeah.
Who's liquid? Who's got a low debt to income ratio?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
And the reason I'm using those terms, because those are very financial things when you look at purchasing a home or making a large auto purchase. Because
mm-hmm.
you know what? The cars rolling off the lots today are the prices of houses that our parents bought.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And the some of our parents that are driving around with insurance policies are still driving around with those policy limits from, you know, when they were kids.
Yeah.
They grossly undervalued. I've caught myself boomering more than once when it's come to income or the price of something.
Yeah.
And doing the, hey, you know what? A cheeseburger should cost, you know, $2.
Yeah, but no, it doesn't.
You know, and I'm picking, you know, great big quarter pounder cheeseburger. It is like, no, it's nowhere near that.
Nowhere near that. You're looking at, if you want a cheeseburger and fries and drink, you're looking at between $8 and $15.
Oh, there's some that are rolling out there, you know, 14, 16.
Hence the range, 8 mm-hmm. to 15.
Yeah.
Depending on where you're eating, what part of the country you're mm-hmm. in, and if you're eating at a Wendy's,
mm-hmm.
and what time you're eating at a Wendy's.
Yeah. So, yeah, that.
The surge pricing.
The surge pricing is, you know, out there. You know, people are like giving Wendy's a horrible thing. They just renamed what they're doing.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah. They quickly renamed it and shuffled on because, you know, those apps are incredible for that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's going to become a thing, you know, to get at that disposable income.
Mm-hmm. People are being, right now, people are very... They're holding on to their disposable income hard.
Well, I don't think there's that much left.
Exactly.
And I think the people have, you know, healthcare was one of the first ones that moved to it. It's not what the cost to do that is. Mm-hmm. It's the cost of what I can charge.
Yes. Yep.
And that's an entirely different ball game. In late capitalism that everyone needs to understand. It's like, no, price isn't based on cost of goods anymore. It's based on what the market will bear.
Yeah.
What is the market price?
Yeah. It's the cost of a lobster. It's the cost of a collectible. What mm-hmm. will the market bear? What will someone pay for this?
What will someone pay for this? And can I get enough people to pay for that, that I don't have to do a whole lot of work and still keep my lights on? That's
the, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
It's a very different concept.
It's
and you know, we need to get back to that. Hey, how do I improve this system? How do I hand out a diploma? It's how do I have them learn while handing out that diploma?
Yeah, exactly. They might get a diploma, but have they learned what it took to get the diploma?
Well, yeah, you can't dummy down the value. You can't write it down and saying, oh, well, and then, you know, pull up and it's like, well, why was my change counter wrong at the counter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you support the education bond? Well, no, it's a ripoff.
There you go. Problem solved. You just answered your own question, didn't you?
Exactly. Congratulations. You played yourself.
There you go.
Then we should end it on there.
Yeah, that's an interesting note to end it on, but let's do that. So thanks for joining us here at Wenatchee Insurance here in Wenatchee, Washington.
Uh-huh.
And Suzilla, our lovely podcast, which we're going to try to be consistent about, but you know.
We're working on it. We're improvement.
It's continuous improvement. We are a project and work. So thanks very much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.